Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 27th of December, recording at 8:54 p.m. That's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first, the highlights on this holiday shortened day, at least in terms of trading volumes. The Asian markets were a bit mixed. No big drama here today. Although among the steadier notes were Thailand following the election, and also China has extended its recovery, although the Hong Kong indices were a little bit lower in here today, to the tune of about 1% on the Hang Seng Index. Europe mostly held up during some selling pressure on Wall Street in response to weak economic data and the tragic assassination of Benazir Bhutto may have contributed a little bit to Wall Street's sell-off, because it's just another global problem to consider. Now, although the main factor here is clearly just the quite weak economic data that was reported today, and that's put the Dow down 185 points, or 1.36%, close to the close here, and that's near the lows of the day. Now, bonds broke a four-day decline, U.S. Treasury bond prices, that is, today, and rallied just over a point in current after-hours trading. The dollar, which had a downward dynamic yesterday, has had certainly follow-through here today, quite weak, with the U.S. dollar index currently down 533 points as I speak. That takes it back down to 76.16.19. Beg your pardon, 76.618 as I speak. It's changing all the time, of course. Precious metals have seesawed here a little bit, but are ending mostly a little bit lower on the day. And despite that dollar weakness, I think they've caught a little contagion here from the stock market selling pressure. The oil price is stronger today, however, although off its highs. Crude oil, the WTI, got up to 97.79. And so really effectively testing those highs not all that long ago. It's currently trading at 96.74. That's up 77 cents. The industrial metals were mostly a bit firmer in here today, although copper has eased 5 cents. And wheat was down and soybeans were down a bit, 8 cents on soybeans, but corn managed to close with a 2.5 cent gain. And I think those are the main highlights in here today. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, it's very much a case of, in terms of stock markets, we're still in the situation of what I have described on a number of occasions this year as the wobbly West versus the enterprising East. The West remains the focal point of risk among the developed economies, no doubt about that, and the U.S. remains the focal point of that risk, not least because of the subprime and related contagion. And while bank shares are interesting by virtue of the declines that they have already seen, I have often mentioned that I felt that there would be a long convalescence before they staged any kind of meaningful recovery. And I certainly continue to hold that view. And that view has only been confirmed by what I read in Donald Cox's Basics Point, his excellent report which I'm unable to post, but I have provided a link to it in the subscribers area, so you'll be able to read it for yourself. It's an interesting report. He also has some useful comments on gold, but it's got about as good a history, quite informative, with some new material that I hadn't seen previously regarding the whole background to the subprime saga. And and some of the ramifications which we are still discovering in terms of who actually held this stuff. But it's also very interesting in terms of the governance issues which I've often talked about. Now, immediate problems for these banks. The good news, or mostly good news, is that we have seen those sovereign wealth funds come in and help to recapitalize these U.S. banks. Also, and not just the U.S. banks, we've also seen that with UBS, but at a hefty cost in terms of fairly stringent interest rate charges. Then there will be some dilution of existing shareholders' positions, and existing shareholders are pretty unhappy about what they, some of them at any rate, regard as misleading information in terms of the scale of the losses or write-downs that have been taking place and that are still pending for a number of these institutions. And there are also bearish reports. Okay, this may be another case of the piranhas biting each other, but Goldman Sachs produced a report today saying that Citigroup might have to chop its dividend by about 40%. In fairness to Goldman Sachs, we've had some other analysts, I think non-banking sector people, also forecasting that there would be some dividend cuts by Citigroup and others. I don't hold a view on that, but obviously it's a possibility. They are strapped for cash, and it will not be easy to maintain those quite chunky dividends. And I think the Citigroup yield on current prices is over 7%. Now, there is also the probability that there will be more bad news emerging from these banks. There is also the likelihood that we will see some additional money-raising efforts, which could easily include general rights issues. So while I've said that, often mentioned this memorable quote in my opinion, that risk is often lowest when it is most visible, and the banks are interesting down at these levels, and I believe they are at least at the beginning of an overall bottoming out process. Again, I want to emphasize the prospects for a lengthy consolidation. That's certainly what we saw with the Japanese banks following Japan's big property meltdown. Now, I don't expect the convalescence period for the Western banks to be anything like as long, but the convalescences could involve a bottoming out and base building process that lasts for a number of months. Could easily be a year or two. I just don't know. We'll have to see. But I think that there is enough uncertainty out there. The risks are sufficient to prevent a rapid recovery occurring in this sector. The European banks are marginally better overall, and Japan aside, the Asian banks don't appear to be much affected at all, and I think most of them are not affected by this problem. But returning to Wall Street and to the European stock markets, I described in my last audio just before Christmas, on Christmas Eve, I believe, I described the Western banks as the Achilles heel. And we could say the same for Japanese banks and Japan's stock market. And we're going to remain a drag on overall performance. Now, if the bank's just steady, that would quite possibly be enough for the indices to maintain their trading ranges, and we have seen and the banks show some steadier action here today, although the US indices are right down on their lows, and it would be a brave man who would say that those lows are going to hold, and I would not be the least bit surprised to see those lows give way, although possibly only temporarily. But the more important point here is that if we have while we have continuing concerns about the banking sector, and I think this is going to persist for a while, that does act as a cap on the overall performance of these broader stock market indices in the regions affected. Conversely, when we get relief rallies in the bank shares, short covering, and some buying at these rather depressed levels, then that does encourage the broader stock market indices to move closer to the upper sides of their range. The outstanding performer in that respect in Europe has certainly been Germany. And I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see an upside breakout, although not with the Dow closing down nearly 1.5 points here today. I beg your pardon, closing down nearly 1.5% at 192 points. And just run through the other figures here. We're off 21 on the S&P 500 and 47 points. That's 1.75% on the NASDAQ Composite Index. So the U.S. indices have shown moderate size downward dynamics in here today. That has capped the small rally that we had seen, and it keeps that triangular pattern intact. So, in other words, we've had higher reaction lows since the August lows, and we've had lower rally highs occurring over the last many months as well. Very much ranging patterns with this narrowing spread between the peaks and troughs. The European indices are mixed. I describe Germany as being among the stronger ones. The weaker ones, of course, have the heavy weightings of banks and property shares. So banks, properties, home building, these are likely to be a drag on broader indices here for some time. Now that does mean to me that the fuller money themes, and Chindia is right there at the top of the list, along with the global resources sectors, and among emerging markets, among the commodity producers, those who have big food industries as well as the mining. I mean, Brazil springs to mind instantly. These remain much, much stronger relative to the Western markets and remain infinitely more attractive. Now, China, of course, the mainland China indices have had that big overall correction, but the Shanghai A-share index, for instance, has steadied not unpredictably above that 5,000 level. Today's rally has taken out the most recent in the sequence of lower highs, so we do see some bottoming and support building action in what looks like the low point of a consolidation to me. In other words, we'd have to see the A-share index sustain a break below that 5,000 level to indicate a more serious correction. Meanwhile, I'd give sideways to higher ranging the benefit of the doubt. And we have seen a somewhat steadier tone in the Hong Kong indices as well. We've seen the going back to mainland China, the B-share index has been stronger than the A-share. B-share indices have been stronger than the A-share indices recently, which should also be mentioned. So I still think those themes remain attractive. Obviously, the weak U.S. economy is going to slow, has already slowed global GDP growth somewhat. We see that particularly in Europe. We haven't seen much of it in the data for the commodity producers or the leading Asian emerging markets, but I assume that we will see it. But nevertheless, the contrast is going to remain dramatic. Let's say, and this is not a forecast, but hypothetically, let's say China's growth were to slip back to the 8 to 10% range. That would still look hugely attractive relative to a Wall Street, which is just going to skirt by, perhaps avoiding a technical recession, with the help of that stronger global economy and a much weaker dollar. And of course, the Asian markets have the currencies that are appreciating, albeit slowly, because those currencies are pretty well all managed by their respective central banks. But clearly, it remains a more attractive picture. And these resources exporting markets are showing bumper earnings. And I think that's going to continue as well due to the surge in global food prices and also the infrastructure demand which is occurring in their own countries. So really, these developing economies and these commodity exporters remain in a very, very attractive position overall relative to the Western markets generally, and particularly relative to Wall Street in terms of overall risks. Now, this doesn't mean that they uncouple entirely. We have certainly seen some economic uncoupling, and that's not surprising, given the background that I've just described once again and described on so many occasions. However, the Wall Street leash effect still applies, although it's not quite so strong as it was. And I have mentioned in earlier months, I've mentioned the emergence of a Chinese leash effect as well. Now, until not long ago, both were under pressure, so both of those leashes were negative because China was also experiencing its correction at a time that Wall Street was suffering the subprime-related related problems. But the Asian region is now firmer. I don't think it's going to run on the upside against the background of a further decline on Wall Street if that occurs. And I think Wall Street will certainly remain choppy, although I maintain that the Fed is very concerned to prevent Wall Street from experiencing the bear market that so many analysts have been predicting for it, because that would just compound the economic problems, compound the debt problems, for obvious reasons. So I expect monetary conditions to remain very accommodative, overall to become even more accommodative, and some of that money will, of course, spill into equity markets and perhaps also into some of the bond markets that may help to prop up the weaker, mainly Western markets, and to push some of the stronger markets, such as Chindia and the resources sectors, may help to push them further into new high ground. But we shouldn't expect too much on the upside. Not until more of these subprime-related fears abate. Also, the pauses and ranging phases that we've seen on a number of these Asian markets and also a number of these resources markets are allowing indices to correct some of those upward extensions relative to their 200-day moving averages that I've shown from time to time, and of course that you can look at on any day in the chart library yourself. Now, that is important, and it's gratifying when you see markets such as India, which have been able to do most of that by just ranging sideways. Here, overall, China required the bigger setback because it had become so overextended relative to its moving average. But overall, as I say, the activity in these preferred markets at Fuller Money, the overall activity of those markets really does look constructive, and suggests that we will see further gains in 2008. Which will is well is pretty well bound to be a somewhat choppy choppy year as well, but that doesn't mean that there won't be a number of opportunities, additional opportunities. I think that the precious metal sector looks increasingly interesting. We've had that very positive lead coming from platinum. That's a very important signal since platinum has led on so many additional occasions. We've seen gold improve considerably within what had been that triangular pattern. Gold has broken to the upside in that pattern, although it's still below its highs that we've seen a couple of months ago in what is a but continues to look very much like an overall consolidation prior to additional gains on the upside. And the Gold Bugs Index, which I'll be posting a little later on here today, that's steadied above a lot of underlying support overall. So that looks interesting generally. And to repeat a point I mentioned earlier, have a look at some of the interesting comments that Donald Cox made about gold when you click on the link posted in the subscribers area. But of course, a strong gold price is not going to fill investors generally with confidence about other equity investments, and that may well cause some continued concern, as would rising long-dated government bond yields. And I do expect long-dated government bond yields to rise over the next year or two, but not really until investors become less concerned about economic slowdown and more concerned about the food price and energy price inflation that we are experiencing. Now, that is very much a recipe for stagflation, I think, in the United States. Stagflation is something that I've mentioned on a number of occasions that I felt was a strong possibility for the US. And for new subscribers who are less familiar with that term, that just means that you have a stagnating economy, basically in the US, basically a moribund consumer sector, offset, partially offset by the stronger performance of the leading multinational companies, some of those being tech companies, but really talking, and not to mention the food companies in the US, the agricultural stocks in the US. Those are the leaders that are going to help to hold the indices or to cushion downside risk in the indices, and those are going to be the companies that continue to do exceedingly well. And let us not forget that they're also consolidating earnings in weak US dollars. Now, moving on to the currencies, We've seen a lot of forecasts recently that the dollar has bottomed, that it's going to have a major recovery in 2008. Well, I'll just remind you that it was only a couple of months ago when the dollar had fallen down to its lows to date, it's the dollar index to its all-time lows to date, that we had a lot of very bearish commentary and talks of dollar collapse. I think the behavioral clues and currencies are extremely useful. And of course, then we also had another memorable economist cover, which was posted on this site, on the Fuller Money site. So what happened? We got a good short covering rally, and as has occurred so often in the past, what I suggest we look for is that switchover in currencies, because currency traders are primarily momentum players, almost entirely momentum players. And so once they start covering their US dollar short positions, and that creates a technical rally, which then gathers a bit more traction as those people go from short dollars to long dollars. And when they are heavily long dollars, you tend to get the wish fulfillment bullish forecasts coming out, writing copy to support their own positions. In other words, not being too cynical, it's very hard for people to be, for anyone to be objective, and we have known financial institutions to massage a position or two, haven't we? But enough said, the bullish sentiment that you get, that we've seen recently, I've described it previously as a contrary indicator, and in the last 2 days, the missing ingredient previously was a downward dynamic for that dollar index, but we certainly have seen it today and yesterday. So I would assume that we've got at least a temporary peak here in what I have felt would be no more than a dollar technical rally and medium-term trading range. And right now the dollar is under a bit of pressure within that medium-term trading range, which has firmed up support in the precious metals. Crude oil, again, this remains very much a secular bull market, as we can also say about the precious metals. And this will probably range a bit more within this overall upward trend, but I do expect that $100 level to be taken out in the new year. Now I'm posting a Morgan Stanley report here today, which holds a lot of views with which I disagree, and I've commented on most of them where I disagree, and I've covered the others in this audio in terms of stating my own opinions. But I often have put up reports which with which I disagree if they contain good graphics and some interesting copy to make their case. And we have reached a stage, certainly with the US dollar, where I think reasonable people who have a long history and perhaps track record of forecasting in this market can agree to disagree on a number of points. And I have chosen to disagree with most of those points, but again, it's important that subscribers always have a balanced view in terms of seeing both sides of the argument. You can see what Morgan Stanley has to say. You know what I have to say on this, or can review that once again in the copy that I've written. And you people are more than capable of making up your own minds. And as far as I'm concerned, when there are two differing views, let the price action be the arbiter. In other words, look at the price chart, because that's always our reality check. And I think that's it, pretty much it, folks, for today. I will be in tomorrow, of course. Owen is still away, but he will be back Monday, and tomorrow we will also have the big picture long-term outlook audio. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.